This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, a PR push yesterday from President Obama with a complex theme. The economy is showing signs of life, but it's still in trouble. Tough times, big challenges, an edge of hope. At Georgetown University, the president tried to walk that delicate line.
There's no doubt that times are still tough. By no means are we out of the woods just yet. But from where we stand, for the very first time, we're beginning to see glimmers of hope.
Glimmers of hope, but how bright? Tough times, but for how long? Families, investors, companies, markets, a whole nation is holding its breath based on those questions. And what might this economy look like on the other side? This hour on Point, we're asking where we are in this crisis and how long it goes on and toward what. You can join the conversation. Are you seeing the green shoots of an economic springtime in your world yet or not? We'll hear in a moment from two high-altitude financial forecasters on the state of the U.S. economy. But joining me first from Washington is Greg Gipp, U.S. economics editor for The Economist magazine. Greg, great to have you back with us.
Good to talk to you, Tom.
The president's looking out there. Fed Chief Ben Bernanke's looking out there. White House top advisor on the economy, Lawrence Summers, is looking out there. What do you see in the numbers, Greg?
When I look at these numbers, I do feel some reasons to be a little bit more optimistic than I've been in some time. I think what we can safely say is that the economy is probably still contracting, but it's definitely contracting at a slower rate. And, you know, after the pain we've been through, even that feels good. And, in fact, we've seen some tantalizing signs that things are actually flattening out, that activity isn't shrinking any longer. Just this morning, for example, we got a survey from New York State, which suggested that manufacturing is about to stabilize. We've had a couple of months of car sales edging higher, albeit from painfully low levels. And even the housing market, which is where all the problems began, we've seen sales start to stabilize and people responding to the amazing bargains that are available in some markets. And if you look at the stock market, it's taking all this in and saying, well, the disaster scenario that we used to think was on hand is not going to happen. And so we've seen a very encouraging rally in the stock market.
On the other hand, it was only, what, yesterday that people were talking about retail sales in March being unexpectedly down again.
Right, because I think the key here, Tom, is to realize that the fact that we're not going down any longer at a rapid rate does not mean that we've turned the corner and we're therefore going up. And I think it's exactly as President Obama said, we are definitely not out of the woods. We have a lot of work to go before we're anything back to normal. Credit markets are still extremely tight. And the lesson of recessions past, both in this country and other countries where you've had this shock to the financial system, is that recoveries can be exceptionally weak, and unemployment in particular could rise for another year or so.
So there's the trouble the president's talking about. What about the fear? I mean, I've heard just in recent weeks, people kind of, who I think of as in the know, saying, well, I just don't know if we're really bottoming out or if this is a false bottom. Fear quite recently that there could be another big ka-thunk down, Greg.
I think that's a reasonable fear to have. I mean, this crisis has taken us by surprise at repeated turns in the last year and a half. Every time we thought that we had sort of flushed the excess out of one corner of the markets, we discovered there was another disaster in the waiting, whether it was the off-balance sheet vehicles of the banks, whether it was something to do with AIG, whether it was Lehman Brothers going down. So many things came at us, and I think that if you can say one thing positive, it's that people at the Federal Reserve and in the administration, the Treasury, are now willing to be on guard, and they're not complacent about the possibility that we've turned the corner. And I think that's important because one of the problems in previous crises is that at the first green shoots, the first signs of things turning up, people apply the brakes. They take the pressure off. They say, we don't need to work anymore to turn this economy around. The central bank starts to raise interest rates. The government may decide it's time to balance the budget. I think it's too soon to do those things because there is so much weakness. I mean, an astonishing amount of wealth of households has been destroyed in the last year, both between declining stock prices and declining home prices. Banks are still very reluctant to expand their balance sheets and lend very much. Those are the conditions that are likely to give us, at best, very sluggish growth for some time to come, and at worst, a return to recession.
You mentioned banking, and of course, our credit system has been cited repeatedly in recent months as the critical thing here. If we can't get money moving, you know, borrowing and lending going, we can't get back on our feet. What are the signs there exactly?
Well, we've seen a few small positive signs, which is that the interest rates that companies have to pay on the risky sorts of bonds at the issue have come down a bit. The rates at which banks borrow from each other have also come down a bit. We've seen mortgage rates come down, in part because the federal government is helping people refinance and because the Federal Reserve is actually buying mortgage-related securities in the open market in an effort to pull their rates down. So a lot of people have been able to refinance, and that's very good. It gives them extra cash in hand. Maybe they'll be able to borrow against their home values. Maybe that'll help some people buy homes finally. On the other hand, we know that it's a lot harder to get a mortgage now than it was 3 years ago, where basically if you could fog a mirror, you could buy a home. You now have to meet much higher down payment requirements. You have to prove that your income will support a payment. And so the fact that mortgage rates are down is not nearly as stimulating for the housing market and the economy as a whole as it was a few years ago. And in the vast capital markets where highly specialized firms match borrowers with investors, it's not an exaggeration to say that a substantial portion of that market has just been destroyed by the trauma of the last year, and it will be very hard to get that credit mechanism going again.
So, Greg, a lot of numbers there, a lot of analysis. What are you telling your mom and dad? I don't know, your brother, sister. We're out of the woods here. We may be. Hold on to your hat. What?
It's very hard for me, after all the disappointments of the last year or two, to become unambiguously optimistic and positive. On the other hand, you know, economies do have this self-equilibrating, self-repairing nature to them, which is that, for example, when a house or a stock price gets cheap enough, some opportunistic buyer out there is going to set out there and buy it. In Las Vegas, for example, you can buy a five-bedroom house for one-third of the price that you could have 3 years ago. When prices are that low, eventually people step in to buy. One of the reasons stocks have rallied is that relative to earnings and dividends, they're arguably the cheapest they've been in 20, 30, maybe even 50 years. So it's possible to get overwhelmed by pessimism, just as in the boom times you can be overwhelmed by optimism. So I am, for the first time in a while, beginning to feel that we're getting out of the woods, that the light at the end of that light we see ahead may be the end of the tunnel, not an oncoming train.
Right.
But the thing I do worry about, Tom, is just that our policymakers will ease up too quickly. There's still a lot of work to be done here.
Well, we're all ears and listening very, very closely, but with some fear at the same time. Who wouldn't have it? Greg Ipp, economics editor for The Economist magazine. Greg, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to talk to you, Tom.
We heard a bit from President Obama. Let's listen in a bit more to Obama administration people speaking out yesterday. And here's Ben Bernanke. He was at Morehouse College in Atlanta. He was asked about how optimistic he was about the economy. He said the American economy has had
serious issues with confidence. Consumer sentiment measures are very low. I think what we need to do is restore that confidence as best we can. As the economy begins to improve, as I believe it will, and as the financial markets begin to improve, as they will if our policies are maintained if we maintain these policies effectively, then people will begin to see that situation is beginning to stabilize. I think that will be very helpful. In fact, we're already seeing in some financial markets some considerable improvement.
Some considerable improvement. There, the Fed chief, Ben Bernanke. Here's Lawrence Summers, President Obama's top economic advisor, in an interview with CNBC yesterday, saying things are getting better. Cite a lot of factors: inventories diminishing, better consumer spending, stimulus money spurring more construction.
If you look 2 months ago, you couldn't find anything positive. Every statistic was running negative. You really had almost no positive indicators, and you get a sense of an economy in free fall. I think today the picture's more mixed. There are obviously still problems in financial markets. There's obviously still weakness in housing. But you have a number of things that are more positive.
2 months ago, free fall, we're still feeling a little shaky, but there's the word, things more positive. Let's dig in. Joining me now from Washington is Chris Barberis. He is president of Macroeconomic Advisors, a financial forecasting firm, also president of the National Association of Business Economics. Chris, thank you very much for being here.
Good to be here, Tom.
And joining me right here in the studio, Alan Sinai, Chief Global Economist and President of Decision Economics, a financial advisory firm. Alan, welcome back. Great to have you
Good
as well.
Nice to see you, Tom.
So, Chris, there you heard Greg Ip. We've heard President Obama, Larry Summers, Ben Bernanke. What are you feeling when you look out across the landscape of indicators, Chris? Bottoming out, coming back, still in danger of a tumble? What?
I think the economy is starting to put in a bottom. The green shoots, light at the end of the tunnel, straws in the wind, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
We're beginning to see signs that the economy is reaching a trough. We're still contracting at a slower rate, to be sure, and just early signs that the economy is putting in a bottom and expecting that we'll see positive growth in the second half of this year. Second quarter will still be a contraction quarter, not as bad as the fourth quarter or the first quarter. You know, you get at this point in the cycle, you begin to see some mixed signs. Not everything, as Summers remarks, is uniformly bad. And so those are the early warning signs or early indications that we're putting in that bottom.
So you're expecting, I mean, it can seem right around the corner, by July, August, September, actually out of negative territory into positive growth, recession, over.
Well, you know, it's hard to explain to people that even though the economy will no longer be contracting and it'll be turning up, it's not quite the same thing. You know, in technical terms, yes, the recession will be over, but the pain that is felt will still be very much like what we are feeling today. The unemployment rate will still be on a rise because employment and unemployment tend to lag the rest of the economy a bit. So from that perspective, things will still seem bad and in some respects will continue to get worse for 6 months, perhaps even a year. So it's while the recession technically would be over at that point, it would feel like we're still pretty far down in the dumps.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at the U.S. economy this hour, asking if it is indeed bottoming out, turning around, or still going down, and asking when it turns around, what it's likely to look like. Will it be different than it was before this crisis? I'm joined in the studio by Alan Sinai, President of Decision Economics, and from Washington by Chris Farberas, President of Macroeconomic Advisors. Alan Sinai, first of all, I'm glad you're back. Last time we were together, I was kind of losing it over everything that was happening. You said, well, what did you expect from, you know, sort of Wild West capitalism? And I said, well, that's what we were told this was supposed to work. I was at my wit's end. I think a lot of people
right
were.
And I think I said, I used the snake oil salespeople analogy on the heartfelt and innocent taking in of the stories that you reacted to.
By millions, hundreds of millions of Americans who put their hard-earned savings into this economy, this market. What do you see out there now?
We've had a very good summary by Greg and Chris. I think putting it in some context, we're past the worst in a number of areas. Past the worst. I didn't say things are going to be a lot better.
Hey, past the worst is already a pretty big deal because we feared it could still get a lot worse. Past the worst. You're willing to stand by that.
Oh, sure.
Nail that to the mast.
I would say in housing, the bottoming out process, the early signs of it. Remember, the lags can be very long, very early signs. We're past the worst of the free fall in consumer spending. It was intense. It was unlike anything we've seen.
What about the doomsday scenario that people were putting out there? Credit cards are next. People are going to start defaulting on their credit cards,
Oh, sure.
And then the banks really go down.
Foreclosures keep going up. Defaults keep going up. And we have—
Past that?
We're past the worst for the banks. But we're not past the worst for the business sector, which is slashing. The businesses are slashing and burning, particularly on jobs. And that means for most Americans, where the jobs market really counts, they're going to feel a lot of pain for a long time. And I don't think we're going to get much rehiring. When indeed the jobs numbers begin to get less bad over the next 3 to 5 months, less bad, there's still going to be a tremendous amount of unemployment, high unemployment rate, and that is the number one problem for American households.
Explain how this bottoming out or turnaround or comeback then works. If banks still aren't lending in anything like, you know, full-on fashion, if the jobs aren't there, if consumer spending is still so low, what makes a turnaround? What makes a return to positive growth?
It's really consumer spending going from a big negative to a small positive. But a small positive isn't at all like it was in the past where we had a big positive for consumer spending. So technically what happens then is you get a positive Consumer spending is 71% of GDP. If it goes from minus 3% to plus 1%, plus 1 is a lousy growth rate for consumer spending, it won't generate much job. Any jobs, we just will have less cutbacks. If you go from minus 3 to plus 1, 70% of GDP gets lifted, and you will get, as Chris described, positive GDP, real GDP growth in the second half. Now, is that recovery? I use the phrase some sort of recovery. It's recovery in GDP.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shift from awful growth to not very good growth for the consumer. That's still a pretty lousy situation. But it, in technical terms, gives us – so you have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
A recovery in GDP growth, to me, does not mean much.
Except it's, technically it means the end of a recession.
No, it doesn't even mean that.
Oh.
Because the National Bureau of Economic Research uses a whole bunch of monthly indicators.
Uh-huh.
And so one of the big myths and one of the big mistakes made by everybody, economists and the media, is to look at real GDP and to take that as the barometer of how the economy is doing. Big mistake. We will still have a very bad housing market. It just won't be going down anymore. It'll
well, then I'm not sure what to make of this. I mean, if the doctor says we're well, but we still feel like hell. I guess we're not well.
The patient had a huge heart attack, almost dead,
mm-hmm.
Almost dead in the 1930 sense. The patient now has gotten a lot of life support from the government
mm-hmm.
in lots of ways, and the patient heals, self-healing. It goes on, as Greg said, the cycle is works in self-healing. And so the patient is starting to walk around a little bit. The patient is no longer critical. It's in some areas of the economy, it's not even acute. It's chronic weakness. Consumer spending, we think, will be chronically weak for a long time. And so some sort of recovery is not to be taken, at least in our view, as a return to anything like what we had before. It's just better than it was, and we're out of the woods in the sense of a 1930s-like depression scenario, and that in itself is good news. It's kind of
hey,
like someone in your family had a massive heart attack.
Sure, that's
and they're
great.
Up off the operating table.
We'll take it, but it's hardly paradise. Chris, if things go on this on the kind of arc that you and Alan are describing here, how do you think we'll look back at what we've just been through or may still be in the midst of? I mean, did we dip into a depression here? Was this just a bad recession? Are we going to look back and say, oh, that was a lot of overwrought wailing and moaning?
Well, I think the issue is it's about as bad a recession as we've had in the post-World War II era. When all is said and done, it may well be judged to be worse than the 81-82 experience. And it's going to feel really, really bad. I agree with Alan that even though we're going to have positive growth in the second half, the way these things are technically judged, they're putting a lot more weight now on whether employment is rising. But let's not get hung up on the labels. The thing is, it's going to feel bad for a long time. We do expect subpar positive growth in the second half. And by even 2010, by historical standards of what a first full year of recovery should feel like, 2010 is not going to feel all that great. It's probably going to be 2011 by the time that the economy is hitting on all cylinders, and it really feels like we're sort of back to where we were before we got into this mess. But even then, we're not going to have the boom feeling. We're not going to have the froth that we had in the 2006, very early 2007 period. So the unemployment rate we expect to be pushing 9.5%. The good news, the
9.5% when, Chris? This year, next year, 2011?
It could reach 9.5% by the end of this year, and it likely will make very little progress on it coming down over 2010. It'll be 2011 before we begin to see much progress in an improving unemployment rate. But
wow.
We do expect positive job growth. I mean, let's face it, there's always people losing jobs and gaining jobs. Alan referred to the lack or very weak rehiring that we might get as we come out of the backside of this. And I think, there's reasonable people can disagree about that, but it is going to take a long time to work the unemployment rate back down. So we're in for a long slog here, but at least I think we can take heart in that it doesn't look like we're in that free fall. And I think that's what's important for people to take away from this.
Maybe, though that sounds like a gigantic political challenge. If you're talking, well, we're better, but in 2011, we still have 9.5% unemployment. That sounds rough. Let's get some indicators from out there in the real world, our listeners. Brian, Columbia, South Carolina. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, Hi, Tom. As a truck driver, we see the flow of freight and goods all over the country. And in January, we start seeing a major pickup to the point now, actually, we are short on drivers to cover all of our loads, at least at my company.
Wow. And what kind of freight are you hauling, Brian?
General freight, all types, everything from retail to industrial. So we're actually seeing a pickup. Now, that's in our segment of the market.
Sure.
Now, the flatbed market, which handles the heavier industrial construction-type equipment and materials, they are still hurting. But for us, we've seen an uptick to the point we're starting to have to hire drivers again.
Truck driver with a lot of freight and needing more drivers. Brian, thanks for that. Let's get one from Laura here in Savannah. Hi, Laura, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Laura. What do you see out there?
Well, I own two small businesses, and I'm a professional. And although things are beginning to pick up in the coastal area, for small businesses, I think we are still deep in the woods. My bank cut my line of credit in half, never been late on a payment, and I have a credit score of almost 900. They went up on the interest rates when they renewed it. And, of course, you know, the state here in Georgia went up on all their payroll tax rates, which more than offset the little cut that we got in the federal rate.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, of course, the retail sector is, you know, my business is off almost 70%. So, you know, we are seeing some signs of optimism, but we're certainly not seeing them in fruition monetarily. So I would say that no, we're still deep in the woods and as lost as we can be down here.
Sales down 70% and a credit line cut in half. That doesn't sound good. Let's get one more right here from Cedar Falls, Iowa. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling because things look pretty good to me. I'm retired, have about $500,000 in an IRA, and it just went up 3% the other day. First time that's happened in a long time, and so I'm feeling pretty good.
3% looks like a little bit of heaven right now.
Yeah, it hadn't happened for a long time, and it actually went up. Not just flat, it went up, and I loved it, and I just thought I'd tell you.
That's different from the old toboggan ride everybody's been taking down for so long. David, thanks for that. Alan Sinai, there's three reports. Freight up, sales down, a little tick up in the 401k, and it feels good after all that loss.
Sure, it's all part of where we've been. Where we've been in terms of the freight traffic is so abysmal that any change, you know, a change from aggregate consumer spending from -3, -4 to +1 is going to be reflected in freight traffic, depending on how many people were laid off to begin with. So moving from there, you get some hiring.
But Laura with 70% down in sales still.
See, here's the thing. Consumer spending, consumers have to save. The saving rate is much, much higher. We have a lot of saving to do, a lot of balance sheet rebuilding to do in the household sector. Household financials have never been so bad. And so Laura, unfortunately, in that retail business is going to be in trouble for a long time because consumer spending will come back, but nowhere near what it was probably when she started those businesses. So she's off 70%. It's not surprising. I think, Laura, what you ought to do is go to another bank. There are a lot
Shop
of smaller
around.
Banks
mm-hmm.
who are willing to put out money to good credits. The big banks aren't. They don't want to take a chance because they've got so much baggage that they have to deal with. There are good community banks who you can go shop around and probably with those kinds of credit scores and your record of payments, you can find a loan. It may be that you can find a way to get in on the government plan, the TALF plan, for small business in terms of getting a secured loan.
She should be golden with those scores. So
maybe
somebody else would bite. Chris, what about our 401k caller in Cedar Falls? $500,000 in the bank. Lucky for him. Good for him. And it's up 3%. You know, for some people, many people, it's just do I have a job or not? For those fortunate enough to have some savings that have been in the market, if we get on the path that you're describing here, unemployment may still be up, but what about the market? Does the growth you're anticipating mean market turns up again or not necessarily?
It does mean that the market turns up and that it continues to make at least unsteady progress in the upward direction. As is fairly widely reported, the stock market tends to turn up before the overall economy. Coming out of recession, I think we've probably seen that. We've probably put in a bottom in the stock market. And we're beginning to see some recovery. We're still way down from the previous highs. It will take a very long time to recover those previous highs, but at least we'll see continued, if uneven, improvement in equity values, broadly speaking. I do want to take a little issue with what Alan said. The 70% down that Laura experienced in her retail business,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm guessing that there's probably a particular reason for that, and we also have to worry about whether there's a seasonal component to that being off as much as she described. But if the personal saving rate went from effectively 0 to 5%, then it would mean that the, you know, other things equal, that the consumer spending would be down only about 5% over the long haul relative to what it would have otherwise been. So it's true that we're not going to get back to where we were, maybe in the level of consumer spending for a couple of more years, but it doesn't mean that she's going to be down 70% forever. There's a strong recovery in consumer spending out there. Those that had the biggest declines will see the biggest increases coming out of this. But overall, we do have to remember 90% or more of the population is still working. We can argue about other definitions of unemployment. Some people don't have the jobs they want. They're not making as much as they want. But over time, as the labor market tightens up, those people will move to the kinds of jobs that they prefer to have and that they're best suited for.
Yep.
And this issue with having to save more, you know, the question is how high does that saving rate have to go? You know, we think that if we got it back to 5%, that over time that would be very effective in rebuilding balance sheets in the household sector, combined with recovery in the stock market that would continue for a few more years, that we can get the household sector in pretty good shape, you know, 3, 4, 5 years from now.
5%, that's right. We haven't seen in a long time. That would be a big turnaround in itself. Let's get a call from Providence, Rhode Island. Eric, you're on the air, Eric.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask about sort of the bigger picture, a little more long-term.
Mm-hmm.
One of the issues that it looks like we're facing now is we're in the not-too-distant future going to be running up against the roof of stuff that we can use to make stuff with. I mean, that's sort of the core of an economy is producing goods and services, and that means consuming resources.
Yeah, we've been pretty good about figuring that out in the past. You think we're at the end of, I don't know, copper, aluminum, silicon. Oil's certainly a problem. Other issues as well. But, I mean, do you think there's now an environmental cap on producing again, Eric?
Well, I think that it doesn't seem like it's a coincidence that this current whatever we're in, recession, decline, depression, whatever
yep.
you want to call it,
yep.
happened to coincide with a huge spike in oil prices.
Yeah.
That's going to point the way to the future, regardless of whether we get, you know, 1% growth or 1.5% growth by the end of 2011.
And we've heard that case made right here that we're hitting an economic crisis and an environmental crisis maybe at the same time. Let us pick it up. Alan, do you see, on the resource side, do you see a structural problem with getting back to growth? A lot of people have become worried about that.
Well, I actually don't think, for various reasons, including the collapse of the non-bank financial intermediary world, the financial institutions' ability to supply credit and funds to energize the upturn. They over-energized this past upturn. We had a boom, then we had a bust.
Mm-hmm.
But the financial system won't be back to any kind of semblance of decent health for a long time. And so we're going to grow. Our potential growth is going to be a lot less than people think. The potential for the economy will be a lot less than people think. And
because of the structure of the financial industry, or because, I don't know, the world just doesn't have enough, as Eric says, stuff
well,
in it
we,
to work
we're not
with
going
anymore.
To have the ability to take, nor the willingness to take risks from the financial side, from the investor side or the supplier funding side in this country post this episode that we had before. Plus, the rules and regulations will be different, justifiably so, different. U.S. Financial energy for the upturn, which was huge, banks and non-banks, just isn't going to be there anymore. And that says that our potential for growth will be less because the financial part of the growth picture will be much compromised.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at the U.S. economy today, asking if it is bottoming out, turning around, or still going down. And we're asking when it does turn around, what it's going to look like. President Obama talking about that, just that, yesterday at Georgetown University in Washington, using biblical imagery from the Sermon on the Mount to explain how he wants to address the economy.
We cannot rebuild this economy on the same pile of sand. We must build our house upon a rock. We must lay a new foundation for growth and prosperity, a foundation that will move us from an era of borrow and spend to one where we save and invest, where we consume less at home and send more exports abroad.
A little "What Would Jesus Do?" from the president there yesterday, and we'll talk about what these metaphors might actually mean. We've been talking with Chris Varveras, president of Macroeconomic Advisors, joining us today from Washington, D.C. He's also president of the National Association of Business Economics. Alan Sinai is also with us, chief global economist and president of Decision Economics, with me right here in the studio. All right, Alan, let's look at the big structure. How do you interpret President Obama saying, you know, we built this thing on sand, now we've got to build it on rock? It's right out of the Sermon on the Mount, but what does it mean in current economic terms?
Well, I think a lot of the sand actually was solid when we did it. It got turned to sand later on when the abuses and the excesses got into the boomy part of the economy. But we'll forgive him for the that kind of commentary, because he's, as always, an exhilarating, articulate, inspirational speaker, and that's a very important characteristic for any president to have. I think.
But your comments suggest we're going to go back. We're going to go back to something that was there, and people are looking for the new narrative here. I mean, there's this notion of a kind of failure of a whole line of understanding what we were up to,
too big a condemnation. But that's a topic for another time.
Let me tell you where
we're headed. I mean, we have to ask ourselves whether an economy with heavy involvement the federal government in lots of ways, that may extend beyond the emergency help that the federal government and the Federal Reserve is providing to our economy, what kind of economy we'll have in that situation and how that will work. In the case of banking, I think we're going to get old-time banking. We're going to have financial institutions that will gather deposits in one form or another, and they'll lend, and they won't be able to sell all that stuff off, which is a good thing. We'll go back to more traditional banking.
In other words, they won't sell it on down the river to somebody else. It's packaged and repackaged.
Exactly right.
Nobody's
exactly
responsible.
Right. Exactly right. And that would be a long time before we have any kind of securitization back in those financial markets. People will buy a house not to speculate. They'll buy a house because they want to live in it and use it, and they're not going to sit there with houses that they don't use and occupy, because it's no longer going to be a great speculative investment, and that means the housing work will be less. And consumers going to save, not borrow. They're going to cut down debt. Cutting down debt's a good thing, and they're going to spend a lot less, and that's going to affect all kinds of consumer-related businesses. 5% of the savings rate may be too low. We may get to 7 or 8%.
That's up where the Japanese and Chinese and others have been, that looked totally out of sight for us for so long.
But those are four differences, plus a huge change in the global economic geography, which will be intensified. The leader of the charge on energy for the global economy, I believe, will come from China and Asia, will not come from the U.S., which is different from history.
Is this going to feel any good? It sounds like thin gruel compared to what Americans have been accustomed to.
It'll be better, a lot better than what we've been through.
Well, in the last 6 months.
There will be a lot of very solid, healthy foundations, like more saving and less excessive consumer spending. We won't have a speculative boom in housing and all that brought. Mm-hmm. And the banks will be more traditional banks, and they'll have to put up their own money to take risk. These are all good things.
But 1% growth, that goes on for a long time. I mean, that's going to feel very anemic compared to what Americans have been accustomed to.
That's right. That's absolutely right. It's a different
world. Yeah, Chris, please.
Tom, I also want to take issue with the notion that Alan offered, that this financial sector reset that we're going to be going through, that we've gone through and that we'll go through as we re-regulate the financial system, will lead to a lower rate of trend growth for the economy. I mean, let's just dial back to the kinds of financial intermediation, lending and borrowing and lending that we had, say, a decade ago. where the economy just did just fine in the late 1990s. You know, we did have a financial crisis there that started in Asia and spread, and part of the financial re-regulation will be to find ways to reduce the frequency and severity of these financial crises that spill over to the real side of the economy. But we can do fine with a – I don't think it's going to be originate and hold model in the banking system. I disagree. I think securitization will come back tepidly. There's a good reason for it. It'll be done, I think, in a better way than it was done in the last five or so years. But I don't see any reason why a just dialing back the clock on the financial system 5, 7, or 10 years will lead to a long-term reduction in the trend rate of growth of the economy. I just don't buy that argument. It may take during the transition period. It may mean that we're going to grow below trend for a while, and that means a very difficult transition with the unemployment rate, getting the unemployment rate down. But I think that the economy will get back on track, and the kinds of long-term investments that the president is aiming to put in place in the economy can be bring about new enabling technologies. I think if you read that speech that the president gave yesterday, it won't be among his most quoted. It won't be considered among his most eloquent, but there was a lot of meat in that speech, and he really did lay out sort of the intellectual underpinnings for the whole breadth of the programs that he is pursuing. I thought it was an excellent speech.
You're president of the National Association of Business Economics. So what do you make about then in that case about President Obama putting health care reform right in the middle of this thing and right away, too, not somewhere down the road? Do you agree with the president that big structural things like that have to be done right now to get back on track?
Well, certainly our organization does not have a view on what the right healthcare reform policy is. I think if we took a poll of the members to a person, they would agree that something dramatic does need to happen to fix a system that is clearly not operating as well as it could be.
On energy, he talks and talks. I don't know if there's actually going to be that movement on cap and trade or something else, but do you see, maybe we should say radical steps on energy as required to get the economy really back on track, on a rock, on solid footing, or you know, back to energy use as usual, Chris?
The administration is committed to reducing carbon emissions. They've indicated that a cap-and-trade system is the way they want to go. McCain also had endorsed a cap-and-trade system, so it appears that there is a political consensus coalescing around that particular approach to reducing carbon emissions. I mean, there's some differences in the implementation details that are not unimportant, but it looks like cap and trade is in our future.
Alan, these are big long-run issues.
The health care and the cost of health care is a huge leverage item for improving the performance of our economy. So it is right to want to find a way and to have as a goal lower cost delivery of health care in a more efficient way to more people. That is absolutely a terrific long-run goal. The trick is going to be how you get that done in such a complicated world that health care exists in, and we'll see how that goes. But it's the right long-run priority. Energy independence is the right long-run priority. Both of those have huge performance and productivity potential help for the U.S. economy if we can get that done. At the moment, the budget plans of the Obama administration, all things considered, leave us with an incredibly large deficit and huge debt overhang as part of their initial attempts to deal with these longer-run problems.
You don't think that has been necessary? It's been presented as necessary
stimulus.
I think
they're going to have to do better. Otherwise, those deficits and the debt will come back and haunt us and bite us and interfere with our ability to grow.
You think they had a choice? You think they could have not dumped in the stimulus and we'd still be turning around?
Well, the stimulus was a little bit different. The stimulus was to deal with our short-run problems, the $787 billion bill. That had a different motivation. It's the longer-run goals, which if they can get it right, and we can get it right in the United States, will be immensely helpful to us. I'm applauding those. What I'm saying is it's tough to get those things done, and at the moment the budget plans of the administration spend an awful lot of money and run huge deficits and very large indebtedness for us to have to absorb, which can injure us rather than save us. But if they can find a way, and all of us will be helping them do that, find a way to get – costs down and health care performance better, the economy would benefit immensely. Now, one little thing, Chris, the technical thing about credit and growth and potential growth, we ought to have that debate in a panel of economists, because not surprised that you're not there on that particular point, but it's a technical point, Tom.
You mean on whether or not we should consider the syndication packaging and slicing and dicing?
The idea that compromising of the financial system and the state of the financial system impacts on potential growth is more of a technical issue.
Well,
maybe
technical, but I think Americans have awakened to that and want some action on that. Nobody wants to be taken down again by Wall Street. Let's go to Des Moines, Iowa, and John. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for your excellent forum. You do great shows all the time.
Thanks, John. What do you see?
I just think now that there's light at the end of the tunnel that we need some legislation to protect consumers from these outrageous hikes in interest on credit cards. I think we should concentrate on developing an economy that doesn't come from the top down, but by American workers producing goods and services to stimulate the economy. I agree completely with the savings part of your analysis today. That's what builds an economy and a long-lasting economy, and I don't want to see any more house of cards falling in on us like this.
Yeah, and so no more house of cards. And what does that mean to you, John? How do you avoid it?
Well, regulating these interest rates, not letting people sell their paper. That was a very important point they brought up about the banks selling their paper on down the river. I think the banks should be responsible for seeing these loans through to the end instead of making a quick profit up front and selling them on the open market. That just doesn't work, as we can see.
We feel bitten pretty hard by that. Chris Farveris, how about it? I mean, there may, you know...
There are ways, sure, Tom, there are ways to deal with that. You simply keep the bank's butt in the sling on that one, that if the loan goes belly up, the bank suffers the majority of the loss. So as long as there's recourse back to the originator, a securitization model can come back.
Let's go to Christian in Galesburg, Illinois. Christian, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Galesburg entered its recession about 6 years ago when the major employer closed its factory, moved it to Mexico, actually.
Yeah.
And President Obama referred specifically to Galesburg in the speech he made to the Democratic National Convention in 2004.
What about now, Christian? Do you feel spring green shoots there in spite of all that or not?
I hesitate to use the term grim optimism. But I think that's what we're experiencing here. People have great faith in President Obama. They recognize it is going to be a long, hard slog because it's been that for us all this time. And we also have lost, however, we've lost a lot of faith in major industries. At one time, it was hoped we could replace the major employer with another large employer.
Right.
That thought disappeared a long time ago, and now the hope is that we can attract a number of smaller employers whose departure, if it comes to that, or failure, if it comes to that, would not have the economic impact that one major employer's departure had.
Christian, we hear it. I hear the optimism there, but also the grimness at the same time. I mean, there's a kind of determination in that, though, that you've got to respect, and I thank you for that. Let's get one more here from Boston, Scotland. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great show, as always, and great panel. I'd like to say, I think one thing that we're overlooking is the emerging economy, which is the green economy, and that, for example, GE has a backlog of $12 billion, which is up $1 billion over the fourth quarter of 2008. And then the other thing that's real brief is that not everybody, there's a small percentage of the mortgages that are failing. And then the last thing I'd say is that Obama is a confidence builder, and confidence is the only thing that backs the American dollar right now. And so I see a confidence building in people, and which means vis-a-vis the dollar. So, and then the last thing I'd say is, I started investing in the stock market again as of January because I think it was a great opportunity. So thank you very much, and I'll take your comments off air.
Great to have you, Scotland. You're a brave man in January, but maybe you're on to something there. Green economy, Alan, how big a piece of what we see going forward? Is that window dressing? Is it the heart of it?
No, it's not window dressing. It's a big dynamic that will probably surprise us all on the upside.
But you said China is going to lead in what was
In generating, in terms of the relative importance and power in the global economy, the U.S., I think, will continue to lose ground, even as we cyclically recover. I think that's just part of the wave of the world. And we will be happy to see China revive and grow stronger because it will help pick up Asia, which in turn will help pick up our exports.
Do you see enough economic growth coming in this country for stable families, political stability, sort of the very basics?
I think that's still a question mark. Question mark. You know, a question of how Americans are going to live with dynamic increases in the standard of living, the consumption standard of living, which we're stuck with for at least several years. I'm not sure how the body politic will take that. Mm. We have an exciting leader in Washington, and they're doing a lot of things, a bunch of smart people, and that's very, very encouraging. But if we are slow growing and the unemployment rate hangs up, as Chris and mm-hmm. I both think, and it's hard to get a job, and you can't quite buy the same numbers of things we could buy before.
Yeah, yeah.
There's always a question mark, the congressional election, the next presidential election, how Americans will vote.
Chris, we've got 30 seconds. The encouragement here, but it's also some kind of thin consolation in these low growth, high unemployment numbers.
Yeah, it's a slog. The economy will recover. It won't be quite as vigorous as we'd like, but we're going to gradually crawl our way out of this hole.
Well, I guess when you're in a hole, that's what you do. And here we go. It's eye-opening to speak with each of you, and we're very grateful to you for being with us. Chris Barberis with Macroeconomic Advisors joining us today from Washington. Chris, thank you so much for your time.
You bet.
And Alan Sinai, Chief Global Economist and President of Decision Economics. It's always great to see you, Alan. Thanks for coming
great
in.
Great to see you, Tom. Thanks.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, or follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us.